Chapter 7, Part 2. "Boys," said Mountain Jim, "it looks like we're done for."
"Not a bit," said Praiseworthy on his way to the pilot house. The Lady Wilma was already making a wide tack in the wind. She might have been blown hundreds of miles off course, even as far away as the Sandwich Islands.
"The voyage isn't finished, sir, not by a long shot."
But even to Jack, the wind snapping in his shirt, it seemed that the Lady Wilma's luck had run out, and Captain Swain would lose command of his new clipper ship building on the ways in Boston. Jack dug his hands in his pockets and glanced up into the pilot house. The Wild Bull of the Seas didn't have a lump of coal to fight the headwinds, and Jack was asleep in his hammock when he was aroused by a strange sound. And at first he thought it must have been Mr. Azariah Jones snoring in his sleep, or Mountain Jim, or Dr. Buckby, but they came awake too. A deep throb ran through the ship, and then another, and then a splash of the side wheels could be heard, and then another, and another, and the gold seekers bound out of their bunks, and some of them in nightcaps, and collected on the deck. Sparks were flying from the funnel, and steam had been built in the boilers.
"What's the captain burning?" said Mountain Jim, scratching his red whiskers. "Cats?"
"Hardly," said Praiseworthy above the crash of the side wheels, and he gave Jack a wink. "Neither cats nor bricks nor spoiled potatoes. As any stowaway could tell you, gentlemen, we're carrying lumber in our cargo holds, thousands of feet of it, lumber enough to build a hotel. It occurred to Captain Swain to purchase what he needed with the ship's fuel account, and makes a fine shower of sparks, doesn't it?" But the race was not yet won. Jack could sleep no more that night, and he pulled on his old pea coat and the frog-voiced boatswain had handed down to him, and stood with Praiseworthy at the rail. This would be their last night aboard the ship after all. And the paddle wheels twirled faster and faster, and the boat sprit came around on course like a compass needle. "It was you, wasn't it?" Jack grinned.
"Me, Master Jack? You told the captain about the lumber.
"Oh, he knew it was there, but with all his storming about the bricks in the hold, he hadn't stopped to give the lumber a thought, and merely reminded him, you might say."
In the dark of the morning, the Lady Wilma had managed to gain on the Sea Raven,
and the gold ships thrashing bowsprit to bowsprit, and the red glow of their smokestacks lit up the surrounding seas.
"More lumber!" shouted Captain Swain into the voice tube. "I want every ounce of the steam the boiler will hold, and then some."
And the Sea Raven, too, was making a final sprint. By noon, the Golden Gate stood ahead of them, but the extra burden of her mountains of deck of coal was too much for the Sea Raven. Beat by beat of her side wheels, the Lady Wilma pulled slowly ahead. Wood sparks showered from her funnel, and she entered the sparkling narrows of the Golden Gate and finally came out into the San Francisco Bay. The city stretched out across the sand dunes like something that had sprung up the night before, and they seemed to be more ships in the harbor than houses on the shore.
"Let's go to the anchor!"
"Let go the anchor!" Captain Swain shouted from the pilot house window. A moment later, the anchor chain went rattling into the bay, and hats went flying in the air, beaver hats and straw hats and even a cat or two. Praiseworthy and Jack gathered their picks and shovels, wash bowls and carpet bags, and peered at the golden hills of San Francisco. The houses looked like packing boxes with roofs, and tents in every description were pitched along the dunes.
"Gentlemen," said Praiseworthy, tugging on his white gloves, "I believe we've won the race."
After a 15,000-mile voyage and 5 months at sea, the gold rush Seekers had arrived.